Good morning. So today we're going to talk about implementing a three-tiered school-based behavioral health framework across 18 school districts. And I have a co-presenter, Lisa Varhus, who's going to take the middle part, and we're going to just move quickly. We have no disclosures to say. And where the focus of our presentation today is to provide an overview of the Alameda County School-Based Behavioral Health Initiative, to share our school-based framework that we're implementing, and share our initial results. We're Alameda County, we're in California, we're one of the five Bay Area counties. We are 737 square miles, 1.5 million residents, and 21% of our residents are under the age of 18. The students that we work with are from 18 school districts. This is a challenge for us in many counties. There's one school district, two school districts, but we have 18. We have about 223,000 students enrolled. It's a pretty diverse county. 55% of our learners receive free and reduced lunch. And our largest school district is Oakland Unified, and that has about one-fifth of all of the students in the county, and the largest poverty and free and reduced lunch. Well, why school-based mental health, behavioral health services? Well, that's where the students are. That's where the kids are, and that's where we decided to invest an incredible amount of services because that's where we can get the most impact. There are lots of consequences. All of you here, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, know this. But the school-based mental health services have been linked to positive behavioral health outcomes and a decline in depression and reduced in the likelihood of suicidal ideation, as well as many other outcomes. So the goal of our intervention and our initiative is to strengthen and expand school-based behavioral health practice, finance, evaluation, and policy in order to improve the social-emotional health of youth, to improve youth access to and the utilization of behavioral health supports, shift our practice paradigm to increase impact, and to strengthen the capacity of providers to deliver high-quality and relevant interventions. This is our results framework, so I'm going to go a little bit slower here. Children, our framework is that children are physically, socially, and emotionally healthy, that children succeed academically, that environments are safe, supportive, and stable, families are supported and supportive, systems are integrated, and care is coordinated and equitable. In 2012 and 13, and it's grown since then, we served over 8,000 students in 164 school sites and 17 school districts. And the reason why it's 17 and not 18 is we have one school district that is very, very small. This is a list of all of our school-based providers. We partner with our community-based organizations, and we also provide interventions through our county mental health services. But we have very strong partnerships. And for our mental health services in Alameda County, about 85% of our services are contracted out with community-based organizations. We've invested a lot of money in this project and in these services. And the majority of the dollars that we've invested are in our leverage dollars. A huge percentage are Medi-Cal dollars. But it's been almost, it's $26 million, but it's grown again, as I said, in the last couple of years. We've actually invested a lot more money. And most of it's, as I said, leveraged. And this is a little bit about our leveraging profile. We have some investments in matching dollars from school districts. We have some discretionary dollars. And if you know about California, we have the Mental Health Service Act, and we invest prevention and early intervention dollars. And then we have some alcohol and drug or SAPD block grant dollars that we also invest, and some special ed dollars as well.
So just so you know, all the photos that you see as part of our PowerPoint, they're actually our students of Alameda County. So want to look at their beautiful faces. So we started this initiative in 2009, And at the time, we had observed, we had invested a lot of county dollars into direct services in schools, but they tended to be more traditional, bring the clinic to the school kind of models, where you had, you know, a clinician in a broom closet or some space they could find somewhere, and they would go get the kid for their hour of therapy, and then they would return the kid to the environment that was giving them a lot of trouble to begin with. And the teachers would say, it's not helping, but at least he's getting served. So when we as a county, and it also is very unusual for healthcare or the health department in a county to be so heavily involved and invested in school districts. But as we came together to do the work, the first thing that we did was to develop and build our framework based on evidence-based practices. So we've significantly shifted our focus over the last, in the last, what, 5 to 6 years. So here's our framework, and I'm going to speak a little bit to the framework. It's based on reviewing all the evidence-based practice around effective school-based behavioral health, looking at models of prevention, early intervention and treatment, and over time we've developed this specific model, and it consists of two elements. The foundational elements, which is the core of what we do, when we as a county go into a school or a school district in partnership with the districts, we hold all of these foundational elements as core. We are going to build the system based on these foundational principles. And then we have our model, which is a set of 6 components that we look to implement, that we implement in each site. So we'll review those briefly. So in terms of our foundational elements, we are looking, when we go into a district and a school, we are holding these elements and we are also looking for them in the site and in the district. So we're looking at leadership that thinks beyond just the culture of my school and my kids to sort of how can we transform our community and our district. We're looking at building capacity, so really working with teachers, principals, staff. We work a lot with school district administrators around making the case for school mental health and why it's important. Dynamic partnerships. No school district, and especially in California, can do this by itself. So when we partner with districts, we're already initiating a health department school district partnership, and also recognizing that we have a network of providers that will collaborate and work the system on the ground. An equity lens. We apply an equity lens to all of our work, and we apply an equity lens to resourcing many of our school districts. So we know that in education, just like in healthcare, there are huge disparities, race-based disparities in academic achievement. So we really need to look and target our resources where they're needed the most, towards those kids that are furthest from opportunity. Quality practice. We don't just provide services to do something. We're doing what works and sharing what we've learned. Smart financing. Ellen showed previously the grid of all of our different funding streams. We leverage every single dollar that we can, and we build and sustain our program through multiple funding sources. And then results focus. We shared our results framework. Ellen will speak a little bit to our evaluation. So those are our core principles that we use going into all of our work. And then I'll go into the components of our model. So first of all, we are highly aligned with education and public health around a 3-tiered continuum of support. We do not believe that you can provide services in schools unless you fundamentally address the school culture and the climate that is leading to kids having challenges. We love our schools, and we also know that sometimes school climate, school culture, bullying leads to mental health problems, so we need to address those things foundationally if we're also going to provide services. And we know that, you know, 15%, 20% of students, despite that, may need additional behavioral supports, so we provide early intervention services, and then for those who are most in need, we provide treatment. We also have an array of practices that we utilize, some of which are shown here. around the school environment piece, there's a few core practices that we are using with our schools and districts: positive behavioral interventions and supports, restorative practices, restorative justice, other school climate initiatives, and classroom curricula. We're also at the early intervention level, we do a lot of social skills group. We actually do a lot of positive youth development work with high-risk youth. And then we do provide therapy and wraparound services. Our county also operate, we've funded and developed 29 school-based health centers in our county, and we're also beginning to look at how we can provide medication management support in those school health centers for those who are at the greatest need. So services and supports and prevention are great, but you actually have to invest in coordination. It's not sexy, but if you don't do it, then your services and your work is going to be very fragmented. The coordination and the infrastructure has to exist at the school site level through a coordination of services teams, school climate teams, identified lead or leads, but they also have to happen at the district level. There is a lot of turnover in schools. Principals leave, teachers leave, and we've experienced way too many times that you start to build the system and then somebody leaves who has that transformational leadership, and you get somebody in who thinks that mental health is a waste of time and they have to focus on reading. That changes the system. If we at the district policy can create foundation for the practice in the schools, then we can be more sustainable in the long term. So mental health in schools isn't about the provider being in the broom closet, or it isn't about a set of people who work on mental health. It actually is about the culture and the climate of the school and developing strong, lasting relationships with the students. It requires everybody's participation. And that doesn't mean that teachers are now required to be mental health counselors. It's just that all of the adults in the school system begin to see their own accountability when it comes to how they're supporting their students and their families. Whoa. I think this is a slightly different version, so I apologize for that. One of the core features of our model is to have ensure district engagement and support. I'm just going to grab some water. So I spoke briefly about that a minute ago. But one of the things that we did when we strategically set out to implement this model is, while we've provided the service and supports at the school site and ensure that there's some coordination happening at the sites, we hired district-level social workers whose sole role is to build out the system in their district. And what that meant was, either we provided the staff through our offices, or we provided the funding to the districts to hire their people. And we then gave them a specific scope of work. So they're not going around trying to provide direct services to the thousands of students in their districts. What they're doing is really partnering with the provider community and the schools and the teachers to build the system. So the role that these people play includes provisioning behavioral health system strengthening and development. They're there. Any provider, any parent, anybody in the community has a question about what's happening in school mental health, they're the experts. So there's a go-to person, which many districts have not had in the past. They build capacity. They do a lot of teacher training, staff training, administrator training, and consultation. They expand partnerships. They support implementing the positive school climate initiatives. They make sure that all the schools that they're working with are doing that bottom part of the triangle and not just asking for services. We have intern programs in many of our school districts, so they do some supervision and coordination to provide some direct service. I'll talk in a minute about the assessment. And they're integrated on the school district administrative team. Very, very important. They're seen by district staff, whether or not they're actually employed by the district or by us. They are seen as district administrators. They're seen as leaders. So their work is given that level of importance from a district level. all of our services, we work very hard to ensure cultural competence, especially in our very, very diverse community. And our school districts are different, too. Their demographics are slightly different. So when we're looking at building the system, there are certain cultural factors that we always take into account. And the NASW, the National Association of Social Workers, has excellent cultural competence standards. So rather than make it up ourselves, we are using theirs. Plus, I work with a lot of social workers, and so they love them. So the last part of our model involves assessment and strategic resourcing. So we it sounds really good, the framework, the model, and not every school in our county that we fund has all those pieces. Whenever we enter a school or start a new service, we begin by assessing the system along the tree components. What are they? What's currently there? What does it look like? What is their overall readiness to partner? And we don't start by doing stuff. We go in and actually assess what's needed, spend some time thinking about it, prioritize and plan with our partners, implement, and then evaluate. We're always looking at strategic resourcing, being that we're going to put our money where it's needed most. So if, for example, there's absolutely no prevention going on and they have some service providers providing services, the decision would be to really focus on that prevention piece, evaluate what's working, how it's going, and then continuously improve. So that is our model. Here are our results.
Okay. So we first started out by trying to figure out what we needed to do. So when we went in, we actually went in with a goal in mind, and we developed a results framework. We developed a countywide, we're doing a countywide evaluation of all of our programs, and we're using data-driven conversations using dashboards. And basically what that means is we're looking at the services provided, providing that feedback to our providers that are providing those services, and looking where we can target and provide the most services. So if somebody's seeing a child, for example, for 3 years in a row in individual treatment, that's not going to work when there's 700, 800, 900 kids on a school campus. This is our RBA framework, which should be familiar to many of you. We spent a lot of time looking at figuring out what the results were, again, based upon a lot of research that we did, pick key strategies, quality indicators, and the one of the things that I like is we looked at indicators for systems, the staff, the youth, and the family, and the clients, the family, and the youth. Our customers are the families as well as the youth. And then our population strategies or a population. So our ultimate goal is healthy youth graduate from school and are college and career ready. Again, this is aligned with what schools want and what schools are interested in, and I think that was the key. That's part of the key to our successful partnership. So we do assessments at intake and discharge. Which also show changes in internal and external resilience. Our providers assessed the schools on 41 different presenting problems at intake and discharge, and we were able to show that there's improvements in academic functioning, emotional stability, relationship skills, general health, and well-being. And some of the tools that we used the CANS, as I don't know if any of you know the Child Assessment of Needs and Strengths, but that's one of the main tools we use, as well as focus surveys and qualitative research. The results are that we have 20 behavioral health providers that we partner with, again, the 8,000, over 8,000 students, blended funding streams, and using always going back to evidence-based prevention services, and we have spent a lot of time, money, and training on trauma-informed care in our school districts because we're in a huge urban area, and that is, if you can't focus, you can't learn. We now have an integrated continuum of care in our 12 mental health consultants. We have really strong collaboration in our between our clinicians, school district personnel, and as Lisa said earlier, the clinicians and our staff are invisible. So many of the parents and children don't know that they don't work for the school district. They think that they're part of it. We've embedded them, you know.
Infiltrated,
but embedded. We've expanded the funding and services in school districts, and we get invited in on lots of grants, and so we help the school district leverage other resources as well. And we have expanded the implementation of coordination of service teams to improve access and service utilization and follow-up. Again, we have over 500 clinicians providing all of these different types of services. We have practice communities, and the school district, with the school district and the health providers. And in the next few years, we're really going to focus on quality improvement, capacity building, investigating, and focus on more culturally responsive and behavioral health strategies with the populations we serve. Continue to do more family engagement and family support, bringing the families into the school on a more meaningful level. Doing family, we now have a billing code called Collateral Family Group, so that our providers can bill for doing parent support groups. And we want to develop and sustain and expand our blended funding models and strengthen our initiative programs. Thank you very much.